Hi, I'm Cynthia Rothrock.
I'm Casper Van Dien.
Hi, this is Mike Grell, and I'm here with the Long Box guys, whoever the hell they are.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes in caves. Going to cons is our escape. It's like Mega Beach in a star-filled sky, where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. Comics talk for comics fans.
Hey everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Long Box Guys. My name is Thomas Strange, and with me as always are some of my very best friends, whom I love dearly. Tommy, beautiful Tommy, precious Tommy, how are you today?
I'm doing okay, Tommy. How are you doing? What are you drinking, Tommy?
Hey, thank you for asking. I am drinking a beautiful big glass of something brown and delicious.
Did I do it okay that time, Tommy? Did I?
What are you drinking over there, Tommy? It looks like you're drinking out of like a inverted gnome's condom. The hell is that?
It's a little glass of John Barr whiskey.
All right. Enjoy that, my good friend. Josh, how are you doing? What are you drinking?
I'm doing good. I am drinking Narragansett's Lovecraft series, the Unnameable Black Lager.
Ooh, bum, bum, bum,
bum.
And Mikey, how are you doing this fine, fine evening, and what are you drinking?
I'm just drinking a root beer because I got home kind of late. I didn't have a chance to go grab a beer. But I am reading some fan mail from one of our fans.
Do we have time for that fan mail today, Mikey?
I think we do.
We always have time to hear what our fans have to say about us.
And if you want to write to us, you can always write to us at luckybastard@thelongboxguys, or you can tweet us at thelongboxguys. A lot of different ways to get a hold of us. This fan mail says, Tommy is so obnoxious. Mike and Josh need to go out on their own. Thanks very much for putting your show up on Stitcher. Oops, not Tommy, the main guy. Such a blowhard. P.S. Tell him to stop making fun of Tommy.
Blovian. Blovian is the word you were looking for, you moron. Blowhard doesn't work there.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it works fine.
I think it does, actually.
It's all the more funny because we like to hear from you guys, and it's just funny because Tom hates criticism. Any kind of constructive criticism.
Criticism is my bread and butter, my pride and joy. I take it with a plum, with grace. Yes, with grace. Didn't I once tell your wife to go fuck herself when she gave me some criticism, Tommy?
I think you did.
Yeah, actually. I remember that pretty well.
Yeah.
It was about this very podcast. And I apologize that for it. For anyone out there who doesn't quite understand or get the shtick, I would kill or die for my good friend Tommy. Isn't that right, Tommy?
Yes, I believe you would kill me, Tommy.
All right then, Tommy. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. I will try to be nicer to my good friend, my little fucking piece of fuck you. I love you, Tommy. You know that.
Of course I do, Tom. With the podcast. And we're going to do a podcast tonight, too.
Yeah.
Are we?
Yeah.
Right. We made a psychological breakthrough, and we also are going to do a podcast. And today's podcast actually has something to do with breakthroughs, as in going through subspace and all kinds of mental barriers. We're going to be talking about Scott Pilgrim versus the World, or just Scott Pilgrim if you like.
So I got this one. Scott Pilgrim's series of graphic novels by Brian Lee O'Malley. I think most people know the general plot, but back in the day, it was a digest of 6 black and white volumes. They did take a good long time to come out, so if you did start them from the beginning, you were pretty frustrated by the end. I think they started in 2004 and came out once a year. But it was at the time, it was published by Portland Independent Comic, Oni Press, and later republished by Fourth Estate, I think, after the movie had come out. And the film adaptation with Michael Cera playing Scott Pilgrim was released in 2010. And since then, there have been quite a few video game and other adaptations of the work.
All right, so this movie was, like, really one of my favorites. This was, like, a turning point for me when it came to the way I kind of thought manga could be done in movies. It certainly wasn't the very first good superhero movie to come out, but it was a good superhero slash comic book movie to come out in a time when I hadn't seen a lot yet. So this one was kind of a big one for me. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I read the comic books after I saw the movie. Tommy, how about you?
I also read the comic books after I saw the movie, and I thought it was great. It was kind of a slice of life of living in the 90s combined with a sort of, you know, arcade lifestyle mixed in with the superheroes. And also it had a great soundtrack with music by Beck. You know, the movie was fantastic, and the books were very, very closely tied to the movie.
I remember when I saw it, I thought this is probably the best video game movie I've ever seen.
Wait, Double Dragon?
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm saying this is probably the best video game movie I've ever seen.
Come on, Melissa Milano was hardly ever hotter.
That's Alyssa Milano.
What did I say?
Melissa Milano.
That's her sister, the one that was actually the right age, for the age appropriate for me.
Those are those delicious cookies by Pepperidge Farms.
Yeah. Delicious.
Delicious.
But if you eat one, you go to jail.
I liked the movie at the time I saw it, but a few weeks ago I actually watched it again, and I realized something that I didn't notice the first time I watched it, that everybody in this movie, with the exception of one person, is a dick. Well, everybody.
So the one good person is Knives Chow?
No.
Yeah.
No.
What do you mean no?
Knives dates young Neil in the movie just to make Scott jealous and doesn't care about young Neil.
Yeah.
Point. Young Neil
dick move.
And even though they've been broken up, she jumps in and attacks Ramona because she's still jealous.
Yeah, good point. All right. So young Neil, the one...
Nope.
All right.
Kim?
No.
Can't be Gideon.
Definitely not Gideon.
Gideon's the only one who's self-aware other than the roommate, Wallace. Those are the only two who are already self-aware. But no, it's Nega Scott. Because he's the only one who's not a dick, because he is the exact opposite of Scott, who is a dick. At least all in right. The movie. In the comic book, it's a little different. He's the amalgamation of all of Scott's worst traits. But in the movie, he's the exact opposite. Therefore, he's the only nice guy. That's why they're going to go have brunch. Yeah.
Brunch is nice, actually. I like brunch.
Brunch is nice.
You get some eggs. You get a little fish.
Yeah, Scott doesn't even fight him because the guy doesn't want to fight. Why? Because he's a nice guy.
Josh, did you see the movie first or read the comic books first?
I saw the movie first. Once again,
so that's a clean sweep for all of us?
Clean sweep for all of us. I kind of like – I don't even know. It's one of those movies that kind of caught your eye is like Bubblegum. And you're like, oh, I guess I'd go see that. And you sit down and watch it, and you're like, this is a really, really good movie. And honestly, as soon as I found out it was actually a comic book, the only thing I could hope and pray for was that the vegan police were in the comic.
They are. They're not as good in the comic book, though.
They're not nearly as good in the comic as they are in the movie. But chicken parmesan isn't vegan.
You just drank half and half, baby.
You just drank half. But so yeah, actually, some of the concept where they took some of the exes in the movie, I thought were actually better than they were in the comic. But all of the interplay between those things was much more developed and a much better read in the comics. Than I mean, they just didn't have enough time, right? They just you know, cut the wheat from the chaff and went straight for all of the delicious goodness, right?
Nobody really gets a secondary storyline except for Ramona in the movie. Whereas in the comic, everybody has subplots that they're going through.
Yeah.
Even Scott, I mean, it's a fight about evil exes, but Scott's exes fight in the comic book too.
Yeah.
So it's not just him battling Ramona's evil exes. His evil exes are actually fighting each other.
What I would really like to see, not a sequel to the film, but just a reimagining just from the perspective of young Neil. It's the same exact movie, just with young Neil as the main character.
You know, screw that. Let's have a series of movies. Everyone gets their own perspective. One of the movies is called Knives Get Screwed Over. Just saying.
I'd watch that.
Just saying. Yeah.
The Demise of Clash at Demon Head. It's another one of the movies.
Knives Chow, A Hero's Journey.
So
you can't do mine over. I mean, you could do mine over. That's a acceptable idea, Tommy. Even though I just said
one of the things I liked about the comic book is Gideon, whose plan was to break up Scott and Ramona and then offer Scott a spot in the league, the evil league. I thought that was brilliant. Like, sure, I broke you guys up, but now you're ready for a spot in the evil league.
Come join me.
We got stuff to do. Come on.
Yeah.
It was a pretty pure motive, at least. I mean, he wasn't. Yeah.
And Scott gets his ass kicked by a lot of people in the comic book, a lot more than he does. And I mean, he can't even take on what was the girlfriend, the female ex of Ramona's. I can't remember her name.
She had a hammer, dude.
Yeah.
I don't remember names.
In the comic
names
book, he didn't even, he just hid in Ramona's purse while she fought her. But the scene in the movie where, you know, Ramona grabs Scott and they're fighting, that's actually out of the Free Comic Day special that they had for the comic book, which is all about them trying to go to a movie that they have tickets for, but Scott needs to find a drink, and they're like, Scott, you're the worst. You take forever to make any decision. We're going to be late for the movie. And then he ends up getting into a fight, and so they're late for the movies.
Yeah, that evil ex, by the way, was Roxy Richter.
Roxy, that's
Roxy.
It.
Yeah.
That was it. Looking at the page.
Although he did beat her by giving her an orgasm, so I guess he's not all bad.
It's not all
I mean,
bad.
If somebody was going to kick my ass, that's the way I'd want it, too.
Sure. I've been defeated by orgasms way more than anything else.
So a little fun fact about it, they had not finished writing all the comics by the time they started production on the movie.
Would you say that's a fun Alec fact?
I would say that's a fun Alec fact.
There you go.
In fact, I think the last volume came out after the movie.
Wow, that is kind of fun, actually.
And thanks for that special fact from Mike, just for Alec. No, I would like the visual style of the comics. I kind of like that simple black and white. One of the things that it didn't, that you were kind of like, that it was juxtaposed from the movie was like, you know, it was like 80s arcade bright color action. And so when I found out the comic was in black and white, I was actually kind of surprised.
They've released color editions of it.
Yeah, I haven't seen them.
Another fun Alec fact. The name Scott Pilgrim actually comes from a Plum Tree song, which was one of the bands that the writer really listened to back in the 90s and really enjoyed.
Another Alec fact. Yeah, I really did like that. The music was particularly good in the film. And the actress who plays Scott's most evil ex, the girl from Clash at Demon Head, she does sing that song. That she plays on stage. It's her voice.
Envy,
yeah. I like that actress too. I have that a whole album. It's pretty good. The whole soundtrack is very good.
It's also notable for that movie that it has Captain America and Superman starring in it.
It's true. Yeah, there's a couple extra superheroes packed into that film.
That was my next fun Alec fact. Scott Pilgrim actually defeated Superman and... Damn it. And Lex Luthor.
What's that?
Didn't Cena play Lex Luthor?
No.
Who's the guy we hate that played Lex Luthor in the last movie?
No, that was the kid from the Facebook movies, right?
Yeah, same guy in my head.
Yeah, that's not the same guy.
No.
I didn't say it was the same guy. I said it was the same guy in my head.
Maybe his name sounds like Ed Asner, and I keep confusing it with Ed Asner. The kid who plays... No?
Right.
We got nothing here?
Nothing. Anyone have a favorite scene in that movie? I really like the pulling the sword, the sword of love failing. I love that.
Scars are the power of self-respect.
That was so cool, so video game-ish. I remember switching. We've all played the 80s and 90s video games where you're constantly trying to switch out the sword to defeat the end boss or trying to figure out which shinobi move is going to figure this stupid video game out. And ditching the sword of love for the sword of self-respect was brilliant and a really cool move on Scott Pilgrim's part. Bravo, Scott Pilgrim, for knowing that self-respect is better than anything else.
Well played.
Well played.
Dead air.
This is where I would be ranting, but I'm trying not to.
Oh, go ahead, Tommy. Rant away.
Nothing. The sword of self-respect. Something you've never wielded. Or had access to. Or would understand.
You're just building up the fan base tonight.
I know. Trying to stop. I need help.
How does that make you feel, Tommy?
Oh, Tommy, it makes me feel like one of. Mikey, do you have a favorite part of that movie? The comic book, yeah.
I think my favorite part of the movie is the Bollywood dance song.
That's nice.
I actually like it in the comic book that the band sticks up for Scott and they defend him and they fight the other band from the Bollywood number and the other battles too. Really, don't get a lot of the other characters doing any of the fighting except in that big final battle. It's all Scott. So I kind of like the fact that all the other side characters actually stuck up and fought for Scott too. In the comic.
Yeah, Crash and the boys totally deserved getting their ass kicked.
It's true. Damn straight they did. I really like the roommate. What's his name? Wells?
Wallace.
Oh, my God. Him just shouting out shit during the concert in the movie was hilarious.
That made me laugh.
We're Crash and the boys. Time. Isn't that a girl? A little girl?
Yeah, his just pointing out inconsistencies and yelling stuff out made me laugh every single time. And him calling out Scott on Scott's bullshit made me laugh every single time. And when Scott said, bread makes you fat, made me laugh ridiculously hard for no reason. Bread makes you fat? Why was that funny? But it was really funny to me. There were a lot of just good toss-away lines. The stupid skateboard thing down the giant rail. You think I'm going to fall for that? You think I'm going to fall for you making me skate down a rail that's impossible to skate down just because of ego? Well, I'm going to show you. It's hilarious.
There are girls watching.
There are girls watching.
Oh, yeah. I liked it. I liked when he had his stunt doubles beat him up.
Yeah. I love that whole scene. I loved him in that. He was great. He's like, no, man, it's totally cool. I'll help you up.
Yeah, Chris Evans was phenomenal in that role.
Chris Evans was fantastic. Yeah. He should have gotten an Oscar for that movie.
That might have been, I don't think I've ever seen him funnier than in that movie. Anybody?
No,
I think that's it. Yeah.
Well, he was wasn't he on a monologue for Saturday Night Live where Chris Pine was hosting? And they kept bringing out different famous Chris's that people were misidentifying as Chris Pine.
I do remember that bit. That actually was pretty funny.
And that was pretty funny, but
But yet, it was too small a thing. He just kind of came out and goes, you know, I'm one of the guys that you're mistaken for him. That was it.
Yeah. But no, this was definitely his funniest moment in the spotlight.
Thank you, Tommy. Thank you for agreeing with me with that time. My dog agrees too.
All right.
By the way, the actress who played Knives Chow, she was also in Glow.
Oh yeah, she was. Oh yeah, she was terrific in Glow. Man, that was. And once again, that is the only TV show I've ever binge watched in my life. Me and Josh watched every single episode of that. Back to back to back to back. Such a great deconstruction of, you know, feminism and just the sport mindset. That was a terrific, terrific show.
It was a good show.
Plus, good Josh day. And I used to own a wrestling company. We can tell you it was a lot like that sometimes.
A lot of times, just like that.
All right, is that it for Scott Pilgrim?
I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's more to talk about there. I mean, this was and why are we talking about Scott Pilgrim today? Usually we talk about a comic book or a character, and today we decided to talk about important graphic novels. And this was an important graphic novel. It really, you know, kind of brought manga-esque stuff into the mainstream. A lot of kids weren't reading a ton of manga until Scott Pilgrim caught their eye. I know I was introduced to some of the other manga stuff after I started reading Scott Pilgrim. And, you know, of course, manga was here in the United States before Scott Pilgrim. And manga was, you know, incredibly popular overseas. But I think Scott Pilgrim helped normalize that. Does anyone disagree with that?
A little bit. I saw there was a lot of manga going around before 2010. I mean, for me, the gateway drug was Akira. But, I mean, I think...
Oh, Akira was so good. We got to do Akira one day.
Yeah, I haven't even read all the Akira graphic novels, so I'm mostly just familiar with the movie. But the Scott Pilgrim, I think you're right that it normalized it in a way, and it Americanized it in a certain way, but not in a bad way, but just like in a very... made it very relatable to more people.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. It just kind of gave you a reason to go to that section of the store.
I think Scott Pilgrim also made it very relatable to a wider audience in the U.S. in terms of coming of age groups. You know, it was very relatable to young adults and people coming of age, whereas they might not have all been interested in comics, but this was a story that was relatable on a lot of different levels for people.
I agree with you. It's precisely because you said young adult. A lot of these comic books went straight to the young adult section, where, you know, kids were already starting to go and starting to, you know, read some stuff. So, you know, having this in the young adult section, once again, normalized manga style comic books, you know, reading from, you know, back to front and all that kind of stuff. It just was a nice, easy introduction for people who haven't already been introduced to the style.
I think almost in the converse, it also allowed more American artists and comic book writers to do stuff in a similar style and not have it be rejected. So it was very popular American author, American written, very relatable. And I think if you were drawing in this style before this came out, there was not necessarily – it did look like all young adult, all sort of too cartoony for most people to take seriously. And I think this sort of flipped the switch on that as well.
Absolutely. I think the Boondocks, you can see some of the influence from that in the great, great run of the Boondocks.
And when we say American, we're referring to North American because it's
Canadian. Because he's Canadian.
Yeah.
Wow. North American.
You know, all our Canadian fans are like, you sons of bitches.
You sons
Scott
of
Pilgrim
bitches.
Is our slacker.
He's Canadian.
Hey, he's Canadian, eh?
Hey, we can be listless.
Plumtree is con Ken.
Born in London, Ontario, Canada, February 21st, 1979. Yes.
And, of course, we know a little something about
North
Canada.
North American.
Don't we, Mike?
Yeah, their heads are, like, cut in half and they talk all weird.
Oh, Mike, don't make me bring up your wrestling persona.
Oh, you're referring to Jean-Pierre Lebut?
John, for years you wrestled as Jean-Pierre Lebut, the French-Canadian resistance fighter to Free Quebec.
Oui, and I just want to let you know that all you stupid, lazy, fat, ignorant Americans are ruining NAFTA for all of us hardworking Canadian and Mexican brethren.
That was his character. That's not a joke. He wrestled as that. And it was awesome.
And it was awesome.
Imagine how over I'd be now, right? Especially calling out how NAFTA's not working because of America.
Just so you know, Trump, Canada will build the wall. We're going to build it for this side. But we're helping to build the wall.
That's right. Some of us aren't afraid to get hurt. We have health care.
Well, I did a little Guido Sarducci instead of Canadian there, and I'm sorry about that.
Father Guido Sarducci, wasn't he from Toronto?
I don't know. That's what
I imagine a Toronto accent sounds like.
That's not the bad accent there. LT, all right, let's get some last words in. Mike, any last words on Scott Pilgrim?
Yeah, if you haven't checked out the comic, do yourself a favor. Next time it goes on sale on Comixology, go pick it up. It'll be worth the read. It's only like $10 anyways, but if you want to read all of them, it can get a little pricey. Could go to your local library. I'm pretty sure they'll have that in the young adult section.
Damn right. How about you, Joshua?
Yeah, like I said, go see it, go read it. And I think it's kind of nice to slip between the movie and the books. I was watching and reading at the same time this week. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I might try that little sandwich.
Yeah.
How about you there, Tommy? What's your last thoughts?
I thought it was a great book. I really loved the fight scene in the library, which everyone has recommended going to the library. So fight scene in the library was fantastic.
All right, Tommy, you have one expertise whom of all of my friends I respect more than anyone else's. What were the best songs on this album, on this soundtrack?
Oh, I mean, all the songs were great on this soundtrack. I like Garbage Man, though.
We agree on something. I love Garbage Truck. That is my favorite. Tommy, we agree on finally. Tommy, you son of a gun. That's something I totally agree with you on. And for those of you not in the know, Tommy, just how many tracks do you think you have on an iPod? You like hacked an iPod to have like a billion songs on it or something crazy, right?
Actually, I just upgraded one last week to have 380 gigs.
You have a 380 gig iPod.
Yeah, I'm going to make one that's 512. I just didn't have all the parts.
Tommy, much respect. Yeah. I'm not just saying that because people tell me I got to be nicer to you. That's the one thing you got.
But you are just saying it because people said you should be nicer to me.
Oh, you're not going to make this easy on them, are you?
It's fair.
I could put my hate for you on a sandwich and eat it. And you know what? It'd be high calorie.
It'd be vegan?
No, the vegan police would have to take your eggs. It was your brains and blood.
Wait, you put it in a sandwich?
Yeah.
Bread makes you fat?
Oh, bread makes you fat. I'm sorry.
Bread makes you fat. Yeah.
It does make you fat.
My last word on this, Jason Schwartzman, hardly ever – that was the Guinean, right? Jason Schwartzman?
Yeah.
Yeah. Never funnier. I thought this was like one of the best things I've ever seen him in, except for what was the one he was with when there was one other movie I liked him a little slightly better in?
Funny People.
Nope.
Royal Tenenbaums?
Nope. It was with Bill Murray.
Oh, but it was also by the same director who did Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah, it was Wes Anderson.
He was in the private school. It was a Wes Anderson movie.
Like Richmond or something? Or?
Yeah, and he puts on the play at the end of the school year. That's
yes,
the one.
Yes.
Clearly, that is his best movie.
That is his best movie. But second best movie has to be this. And if you know what that movie is, write to us at Tommy. What's that email?
LuckyBastard@thelongboxguys.com.
And right. If they tell us the correct answer to what that Jason Schwartzman film is, what do they win, Tommy?
Our respect.
Besides all respect, you must have a graphic novel sitting
next
to you.
We'll send him out a graphic novel.
We will
the first one.
The first person to tell us what that Jason Schwartzman movie is, And Lucky Bastard at thelongboxguys.com will get a graphic novel sent to you and signed by any member of the Long Box Guys you like. Could be me. Probably not because of the fan mail lately. Or it could be Mike or Josh. Probably because everyone kind of likes them. Or it could even be LT. Probably not. He's a piece of shit. So, right to it.
Holy shit, I just got another fan email. How is that possible?
How is this even possible? We're pre-recording this. Mikey, what do you got at the front of the long box?
At the front of the long box, I have a great recommendation for Josh. I think you're going to like it. It's an Image comic by Rick Remender. It's 7 to Eternity. LT, I'm sure you probably already own it. But it is really good. It's only about 9 issues in. Imagine a fantasy setting where some people have superpowers. And they're kind of like, and it varies from the superpowers. But there's the King of Mud / the God of Whispers, who's the bad guy in it. And if he makes you an offer and you accept it, and it's usually a really good offer, he then can see through you and spread whispers about other people. And so he never fights any wars himself. He just causes other people through the whispers to fight the wars for him. And he is basically taken over the planet, and this group of people are trying to stop him. However, if they kill him, everybody that he's whispered to will die. So the heroes are trying to free the planet from his tyranny, but if they kill him, millions of people die. It's a really good fantasy series. It's got goblins and dragons and all kinds of stuff in it.
So in the end, they have to trick him to make an offer to release everyone but someone and then kill him.
Not that easy, no.
Josh trying for the easy win, but fails. Denied.
I don't know. I don't know.
It's only 9 issues in. I could be right.
Yeah.
No.
Could be.
No.
Yes. Nobody flies in the House of Matumbo.
Damn right. Nobody flies in the House of Matumbo. Tommy, what do you got in the back of the long box for me?
I have Steampunk Battlestar Galactica 1880 by Tony Lee and Aneke.
Wait. Hold on. What?
This sounds awesome already.
I know. I just got a brain just by the boner. Title. The title got me. This is the back of the long box. What year was this?
This was 2015, so just a few years ago. It's a pretty quick read. It's 158 pages long, but it was a pretty good quick read book. The art was great. In it, it's kind of a Victorian esque version of Battlestar Galactica, but they are spaceships so it's not totally a Victorian esque version, but they've got giant cyclonics that are powered by Centaurians, and it was a really cool kind of reimagining of Battlestar Galactica, the original series. It was a really quick read. I mean, it's terribly predictable because, well, everybody's seen Battlestar Galactica.
we all saw the movie Titanic too. We were pretty sure how that was going to end.
I mean, the story does vary from Battlestar Galactica a little bit, but
do they have
steampunked up?
Do they have a steampunk Daggett?
They do have a version of the Daggett.
Nice, good job, Josh. I mean, Mike.
They do have a version of a Daggett. He's more like a cyborg though. So he's not completely clockwork, but it was a cool little series.
Clockwork Centaurians sound awesome.
Yeah. You know, they don't show like as much of the inner workings of the Centaurians though. So I kind of wish they had, but Lucifer is kind of a Babbage, computer construct. So he's more of a clockwork computer instead of a sort of robotic machine type thing. And supposedly all the Centaurians run on punch cards servers.
That's a lot of punch cards, man.
It is.
That's a lot of punch cards.
All you gotta do is start a big fire, and we can defeat these guys.
Tommy.
All right, well, that kind of brings up, oh, my dog's barking at a ball because he's gone off on a tangent, but that's Josh's realm. Josh, do you got a tangent for us?
I do. So this past weekend, I went and saw Ready Player One. If you haven't seen the movie, meh. It was a fun book. It was a fun read. No spoilers here, but I assume everybody here at least knows the premise.
Yes.
Yeah, sort of like, you know, giant internet world. Everyone lives inside it. So
it's Willy Wonka video game.
Yes. So here's the thing. The presumption is you're in virtual reality and you can build one planet of your own that is thematically related to your favorite sci-fi, fantasy, whatever. You get one planet, but it has to have a single theme and set of theoretical rules and laws. What planet do you build?
So this is a virtual reality that I can run around in and just go wild in, right?
And if you want, you can be the most powerful person in the reality or just another schlub in there. It's your world, but it all has to be one theme, one set of rules. So you can't mix and match. One world.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Batman the Animated Series because I think hanging out in a virtual noir setting like that would be really cool.
Tom, what do you got?
You're going to hate mine simply because it's too sappy.
Go ahead and try and talk. Your dog's going to bark again. Do it. Try it. Give another shot.
My world would be upstairs in Mike's house playing Dungeons and Dragons. And we'd be able to enter the Dungeons and Dragons realm, but we'd always start off sitting around that stupid-ass table upstairs in Mike's house, and then we'd enter the Dungeons and Dragons realm.
You're trying to make me cry because that way my mom would come up and check on us, you son of a bitch.
Cute.
Your mom bastard. Would come up and check on us and see if we needed a soda, but never be intrusive and always be nice to us, and then we'd go right back into playing in Dungeons and Dragons. I don't believe... and don't tell the wife this, I've ever been happier than sitting up in Mike's stupid second floor of that house in Palmer, Massachusetts, playing Dungeons & Dragons around a table with you idiots.
Is that because I never played Dungeons & Dragons with you much?
That is absolutely 100% because you never played Dungeons & Dragons with us, you son of a bitch.
I think for
but
my world...
I mean, I would love that. We'd go upstairs, we'd drink a couple of sodas, we'd talk about our days, and then boom, we're in Dungeons & Dragons world. And then boom, your mom comes upstairs and tries to give us ants on a log. And then boom, we go right back to Dungeons & Dragons. What do you got there, Tommy?
I think I'd like to try to build Froopyland so that I could imprison Tom there for a week. You know, Froopyland from Rick and Morty. Wet Beth's childhood playground.
I did not see that one coming. Nobody expects Froopyland.
You would create an entire
virtual reality just to trap you.
In a world where you can't harm yourself or anyone else.
That's right. And unfortunately, the portal to that world disguised as Mike's second floor. Fooled you.
Where Spom comes in and offers you soda. Hey. And as soon as you take a sip.
Here, have some Tab. Oh, I remember Tab. Tab was delicious. Josh, what's your world?
Well, I had one in mind, but I just want to go to yours, Tom.
Thank you. Mike, what was yours again? It wasn't nearly as nice, but it was mine.
Batman Animated Series.
Yeah, you suck.
Yeah, well, when I'm doing it with Poison Ivy, oh, that's going to be rashy.
That's going to be rash.
It's going to be irrational.
Yeah.
I had sex with Poison Ivy. Doctor. That's the end of that sentence.
Phrasing.
Nobody has that sense any other way. I had sex with Poison Ivy, doctor.
So, Tom, what do you have for the social justice section?
Well, as long as we're talking a little bit about a gateway drug into manga, I would like to talk a little bit about how open manga and Japanese society has been to alternate lifestyles. Check out some of the other manga publications, and you'll see that on the spectrum of normalization, towards normalization, a lot of disenfranchised groups are making it slightly higher up the arc than some others, especially when it comes to non-gender binary couplings. Japanese manga has been a lot more open to that, and they find a much broader market than we have. Yes, they sometimes fetishize it, but at least that is bringing it more towards normalization. And it's important that we take a look at that as a good step forward for some of these folks who have been invisible in the past.
Just to piggyback on that, I mean, they've had non-traditional lifestyles in manga for decades now. I mean, if you look back to the late 80s, early 90s, in Appleseed, you know, the main character had a relationship with a cyborg who had virtually no physical outward organic parts.
All right. You know what? I'll take that. I'll take that as part of the normalization towards machine sex. But I was talking more about different lifestyle choices.
I'm just saying, like, you know, he, even though he was a male persona, he had no male gendered parts.
I'm just saying that a lot of the Japanese early manga, going all the way back, as LT said, even into the early 80s, was at least coming up on that the arc towards normalization. And for that, some of those should be read and reread as an example of how we could do it a little bit better here in the United States.
Yeah, it's certainly in the arc. The thing about Japanese culture is that, you know, subculture is culture in Japan. So it's sometimes easier to find things that are overtly against regular society in Japan. And there's sort of flashes of how those are seen and dealt with, and there's sort of like that just accepted underlayer that's now, I mean, you're right, is getting more normalized, but back in the 80s and 90s, even that stuff did exist in Japan. It was part of a subculture that was even today, if you go into Tokyo, a lot of that stuff is, let's say, politely limited to certain neighborhoods. And I don't mean like in the United States sort of way where we're talking about ghettos or segregation of some sort, but there's literally neighborhoods dedicated to certain kinds of toys or manga or societal choices, and they're very clear and delineated even though they're sort of a subculture. It's very strange, and it's very – it's so different than how we deal with things that it's approaching alien. I think I can't imagine anything closer to meeting an alien species than when the East first met the West, honestly. Is that too far off the rails? Did I get too serious there?
I'm fascinated with Turkey, the country, because that was where East and West first met. And that's one of the reasons why that's one of my go-to places to want to go to. And that brings us to plugs, guys. Mikey, do you got anything to plug besides dog shut the heck up?
Yeah, you should check out Kirby Crackle at kirbycracklemusic.com. They provide our geek rock every month, or every week, I should say. And if you want to see Kirby Crackle live, I suggest you go check them out in New Orleans at Southport Music Hall. They're doing a concert May 4th at 7 p.m. for all our Long Box Legionnaires out in Louisiana. Also, I would like to plug one of our fellow podcasters, Who's Next Gaming. They just did a review of Ready Player One. It is a great podcast for all your video game and sex robot needs.
Those guys are getting funnier and funnier all the time. I'd like to plug our Patreon page. If you go to patreon.com/ I can never get that right, the Longbox guys, you can toss us just a couple of dollars a month. You'll get an extra podcast called The Goat. Greatest of all time. This week, I think we did pets. Though we didn't really go far away from dogs. Greatest of all time, pets. And you can get that podcast for free if you give us a couple of bucks at Patreon. So that's Patreon forward or maybe / The Long Box Guys, and you can find us real easy. Tommy, what do you got to plug over there, my friend?
I would like to plug GeekOrthodox.com.
GeekOrthodox.com?
GeekOrthodox.com, purveyor of T-tier shirts and other geeky things.
And stained glass prints and static clings.
Yeah.
And John Barrowman just kind of casually stopped by their booth because he brought something last week. Because that's a normal thing now. John Barrowman just stopping by. I love that for Tammy and Ian. That's terrific. And Josh, did you go, by the way, to the Friendly Neighborhood Comics last week to see Alexa Bliss?
No, I had no idea who she was, so I didn't care.
She's actually a very talented wrestler. She's really good in the ring. She's a good storyteller. She's one of those wrestlers that, you know, tells a story in the ring more than just kills themselves.
All right. Yeah. I would like to say Philadelphia Comic-Con. Philadelphia Wizard World. May 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th. The Long Box guys will be there. You can also meet Sebastian Shaw, Jason Moon, Natalie Dormer, Sean Bean, Ezra Miller, Palm Clemente, Sean Astin, Billy Boyd, Joe Flanagan, Jewel State, Matt Ryan, and many more.
Sebastian Shaw, wasn't that the guy that was the king for the Hellfire Club?
Oh, sorry, Sebastian Stan. Yeah, you're right. That is
Sebastian Shaw, didn't you?
I did just call him Sebastian Shaw.
I got it.
You can also meet Emma Frost.
You can also meet Emma Frost. I meant Bucky, but yeah, totally Sebastian Shaw. Well, hey, maybe Kevin, what's his name? Kevin?
Footloose. Kevin, darn it.
Bacon. 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Maybe Kevin Bacon will be there and you can meet Sebastian Shaw.
He was Sebastian Shaw. That was a weird portrayal of Sebastian Shaw.
It was a terrible one. Terrible.
No, it was a good...
His power set was terrible.
Thank you, yes.
The way they just made his power set was weird for no reason.
I love the visuals of that movie. It was such a 1980s comic book.
I just love Kevin Bacon.
All right, Bacon! Do you remember when we did shots with Kevin Bacon?
Bacon.
That was awesome. That happened. That was a real thing.
Everybody loves bacon.
Everybody loves bacon. And I guess that brings us to the end of this podcast, guys. As sad as I am to see you guys go, Mikey, what is this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comic books.
Tommy, got any last words for us?
It's like hanging out with all of my friends. And it's like, if you could just give a couple of dollars so that we could keep this going, if you could just give to our Patreon page so that people would be nice to me, it'd be so nice. It'd be so, so very nice.
We actually use the money from Patreon not only to pay for the RSS feed and our website, but for LT's counseling from the berating he gets from Tom.
And Josh?
Well, while this is not my sector, starting on May 17th, Philadelphia will be my sector for 4 days.
And don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. And Tommy, I love you.
Love you. Bye-bye.
I'll see everyone next week. Thank you for listening to The Long Box, guys. Have a great night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We mount the highway miles away. Like sunfire, no stopping tonight. A double double, the only thing that can break our stride. Vulture of blast, and we're rocking the cruise. Through a dark night, we're flying with nothing to lose. The wind whipping by like a banshee scream. The tail lights are dragging like Omega Beam. We're on the road, we're going home to the
There's some fan feedback for you. And you're like, that constructive criticism, cock gobbler.